It's Thursday, and that means it's time to talk to a professional who would never forget a name.
So, I wish your son Miller all the best.
My name is Noah!
Why? Because his voice is so velvety smooth.
Yo, Manella, kick it one time, boy.
It makes the girls go...
Oh, my.
He's a rapper so fly.
So if you want sports talk that's more than just a score, you gotta listen to Wade on KD Country 94. We got the tunes that'll make you shake and bake. Z96.3, The Lake.
He makes Eminem wanna cry. It's the voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Heaney.
Sportos, motorheads, geeks, they all adore him. They think he's a righteous dude.
Right now, on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Jamie at 118 North Mill and Beloit, or call them at 738-5701.
Yes, it's the voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Heaney. He's also a rapper extraordinaire. He joins us today via the telephone to talk KU athletics. And, Brian, how you doing, buddy?
Great, Wade. How are you?
I'm doing good. And I just was told that Kansas State is going to hand Kansas the Big 12 championship by beating Texas Tech coming up this weekend. And that's a stone-cold guaranteed lock. Are you okay with that?
I am, my man. I'll tell you what. I was at a Washburn basketball game last night. My buddy Brett Ballard, now the coach over there at Ichabod.
That's right.
My first chance to see him all year. He's doing a great job, by the way. And I'm watching him coach, like, more than I'm watching the game because I want to see what his sideline demeanor is like. But then I find myself watching my phone of Texas Tech, Iowa State, more than I'm watching him. And all of a sudden, I could be at home doing this, but I'm so preoccupied with what the Red Raiders are doing right now, not because I used to be the voice of Red Raiders. And believe me, I love these kids. Keenan Evans was one of the guys I covered the longest. But, man, these guys won't go away. And, you know, a week ago, Tech should have lost at home to Texas, and Kansas would have a one-game lead right now. But Matt Coleman, the rookie guard for Texas, missed three free throws in the last 90 seconds after being fouled on three. He missed all three. If he just hits one, they win that game. And obviously, you know, right now we're tied at 8-3 with Texas Tech, and so every opportunity they have remaining for a loss, which is, in this league, obviously, every night you get beat, but the K-State game on Saturday is one of the biggest ones. And I think Kansas fans, if you're fortunate enough to watch the Jayhawks get a win on Saturday at 1 o'clock, should they get it down in Waco, man, don't book any hot date plans for Saturday night. Watch that K-State-Texas Tech game, because you'd love to see the Jayhawks get some kind of breathing room, some kind of lead, because coming up in just a couple of weeks, back to back to back, you have the three best teams in this league, West Virginia, Oklahoma, and Texas Tech, the Texas Tech game being in Lubbock. It was my hope all along that by the time Kansas hit that stretch, they'd have a two-game lead. That went out the window when we lost to Oklahoma State last Saturday. And so, yes, we are in full-blown scoreboard watching mode with seven games to go, and there's more than just one team to watch. Yeah. Look at Tech's remaining schedule. You got a really tough one. It could be West Virginia.
Yes.
It still proves to be the biggest threat after their win on Monday night versus Oklahoma in Norman, and after they hung it on K-State by 38 last Saturday in Morgantown. They're playing with some real confidence. So, yeah, believe me, I don't think Kansas fans have been this anxious watching the school board and the league race this early before, because, man, we were watching it in week two because 14 straight means so much. But, yes, put on some purple this Saturday. We could use some help from the cat.
Well, let's go back over the last two games since we last spoke with you. You know, this is how I typed it up here in my notes. Defense and rebounding. Saturday against Oklahoma State at Allen Fieldhouse, poor, and they lose. Tuesday, TCU, I put good or much better. Would that be an easiest way to simplify it?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think, as Bill Self said in the postgame on our postgame locker room show with Greg Gurley, that was as well as they've defended and as well as they've rebounded in, quote, a long time. It doesn't mean it was outstanding, but it was better. And clearly it had to be really good defensively when you only make two field goals from a Kansas perspective in the last 10:05 of regulation. How do you win in a comeback game when you only hit two shots in the last 10 minutes? Well, you play really good first shot defense and you don't give up many offensive rebounds at that point because you're better on the glass. And Kansas clearly was down the stretch, because as much as you like to say, wow, they were hitting all their free throws, they weren't. Devontae Graham missed 3 of 4 in crunch time, and you're thinking, oh my gosh, I'm sure you saw it. Udoka had just hit a pair.
Yes.
Devontae misses 2 in a row, gets fouled again, and Udoka goes over to offer advice to Devontae as he throws the line to the free throw line. And Devontae starts laughing, looks up at him, and says, hey, man, I got this, all right? I don't need tips from the peanut gallery here. But the point is, it was one of those unusual games where they couldn't put them away. And I know that's one of those things Kansas fans will lose a little bit of sleep over, the fact that this club has not been able to get separation on a lot of teams. You know, prior to Tuesday night, I looked it up. We'd heard the Rock Chalk chant exactly 1.5 times in 2018. What do I mean by that? Well, we kind of heard it for just a little bit versus Iowa State, and then we heard it all the way versus Texas A&M. Otherwise, the most famous tradition, and according to Dick Vitale, the greatest tradition in all of college sports, wasn't getting utilized because every game's coming down the last possession, or in the Oklahoma State case, in January's loss to Texas Tech, too, they're not winning at home. And so the Rock Chalk chant has not been as prevalent, and we need to see Kansas put the hammer down, put the foot on the throat, and get some separation. What's happening in these games is they'll get up by 6 or 7, and then KU goes into a funk. Sometimes offensively it's shot selection, even from their best players. Devontae and Steve can be baited into taking some really bad off-the-bounce contested threes or long twos early in the shot clock. Sometimes it's missed free throws. It's left the door open for the opposition. But for whatever reason, Kansas teams that in the past would be up 6 or 7 and then stretch it out to 12 or 13 and put a team to bed with 2 minutes to go, not happening this year. And it makes you more vulnerable, obviously. And so the good news is Kansas has defended well late in games, which has allowed them to win a lot of close ones. And clearly, for anybody that watched on Tuesday night, Wade, they won by 7 on the scoreboard, but this was not a 7-point game. This was a 2-point game throughout. And Kansas obviously realizes they were fortunate to get that win the hard way in defense and rebound.
Well, what's amazing to me about that win for Kansas is that Svi and Malik combined for make one field goal. They didn't do anything offensively. And if you would have said before the game, Svi and Newman won't do anything offensively, and Vic has been benched, he's not in the starting lineup, Lightfoot's in your starting lineup, and he's not known as a scorer, you'd probably say the only way we're going to win is Devontae's got to score 35. And Devontae scored 24. It was a lower scoring game, 71-64. But I mean, I guess if I'm Bill Self, I maybe am a little bit concerned by that. But at the same time, I have to say, wow, those two guys didn't do anything on offense, and we still won the ballgame.
I don't think if you would have told me that beforehand, I would have thought they could win at all.
Yeah.
If you would have told me they go 1 of 11, Svi and Malik, and Svi would only attempt 2 shots. I mean, he wasn't even really ever in the flow. At one point at the free throw line, not sure what happened with Steve, because a week ago he was not only our hottest player, but one of the hottest players in the conference and country, with 3 straight games north of 20 and doing it really efficiently. If you would have told me that heading in, with Vic then coming off the bench and all that, like you said, it would have taken a Herculean effort out of Devontae. One of those, like you said, 35-point games that he had back-to-back in the non-conference portion of the schedule. But, you know, thankfully, Marcus Garrett steps up. And 2 of our last 3 home games, including Texas A&M, the rookie out of Dallas has been really good. Maybe he likes playing these teams from his home state.
Yeah.
But he was perfect from the floor. He's a 21% three-point shooter entering the week, and yet he goes 2 for 2. And the first one he hit I thought was huge because he juggled on the catch. And I know when you're shooting with Miller in the driveway, you probably teach him that if you catch it and you bobble it, probably don't just chuck it up because you're not in rhythm at that point.
Right.
But he was still wide open. He shot it anyway. And when he did, I thought to myself, a 21% three-point shooter just became a 10-point three-point shooter. No way this is going in. It did. And they kept going in. And it's not like he went for 20 or anything, but he was perfect 4 for 4 from the floor, hit 2 threes. Everything was good shot selection in rhythm other than the bobble catch. And I thought excellent decisions offensively. And he's really becoming one of the more assertive guys when he sees a gap to drive or a lane. And the fact that he's now hit a couple of threes is going to force opponent defenses to respect him more and give him more dribble drive opportunities. Before, I would have told you Marcus Garrett is a great defender off the bench. And if we get a stick back bucket or some kind of driving lay-in late in the shot clock, anything offensively is gravy with him. And that's probably where it's going to be the rest of the season. But it's good to know that on a night when two of your best three scorers aren't connecting, and LeGerald still isn't November LeGerald yet, that you can get a spark offensively from that young man, because I wouldn't have forecast that prior to Tuesday night. And so good for him. Without that, they don't win the game. Without Udoka being the biggest factor in the game, according to Bill Self, Kansas doesn't win the game. And Udoka was a guy that Coach Self was pretty frustrated with after Saturday, too. And I know ultimately it was only LeGerald that went to the bench, but if this was a team with more options, he might have done the same with Doak for a game, because as he joked, if he could have benched three starters, he would have. And the only guys he would have kept in the starting lineup would have been his two seniors. That's how frustrated he was. And yet I think Doak really responded. I asked Coach, how about LeGerald? He said, it is a step in the right direction, but it's a step in the right direction only because, in Coach's mind, there was only one direction he could go, as in Saturday was rock bottom for Vic. And so I think it was progress. The message is getting through loud and clear. It doesn't mean they're bulletproof all of a sudden, because, hey, they really had to grind this one out, eke it out, and at times it looked really ugly. But we are seeing the staples that made the Bill Self era what it's become and made Bill Self the first ballot Hall of Famer: rebounding, toughness, defense. Those things were what carried Kansas. On a night when they hit just 33% of their threes, they found another way to win. And so when you and I were talking in November and December and early January about this amazing three-point shooting team and live by the three, die by the three and all that, isn't it nice to see them be able to grind one out mm-hmm. against a team that at this point may not make the NCAA tournament because they've dropped 8 of their last 12, but they looked like a lock for the tournament through the first 2 months, what would have been their first tourney in 20 years for TCU. That, to me, is progress. And you obviously don't want to have to win that way every night, but it's good to know you can, because there will be nights when you have to. Hopefully that's the last time we see Svi go over and the last time we see Malik and Svi combine for just one make from the field. But to me, I think the fact that you can prove to win in other ways is an excellent sign that maybe this club can go a little bit farther in March than what some have recently been saying. I don't know about you. It's interesting how much the conversation has shifted around here. People are more concerned with 14 straight than they are NCAA seeding or possibly going back to San Antonio. That seems to be, you know, the focus. And that is, you know, the primary focus of this team. But I do think we shouldn't be writing off our hopes in March either, because Bill Self is the ultimate guy when it comes to getting the most out of every individual player and the collective sum of the parts and getting it to peak when it needs to. And this team is going to peak later than most Kansas teams do because of the late addition in DeSosa and everything they went through early in the year. It took longer to develop an identity. You hope they can win 14 straight en route to finally finding themselves. But this might be a team that peaks in late February, and that spills over into a really great March. So let's not write off our hopes on that just yet, because Bill Self is still the coach. He's still got an All-American caliber senior leading you. And to me, I'll bet on those guys to surprise us most nights versus just about anybody in this league.
Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Jamie at 118 North Mill in Beloit, or give them a call at 738-5701. You mentioned DeSosa. Maybe I missed this, but he didn't play, did he, on Tuesday?
No, he did not.
Okay, so, you know, I think he's in a really, I mean, he was put in a tough situation, and I think Coach Self knew it all along, too, and he's played a few minutes here and there. For those that have been asking me, I'll ask you, do we think DeSosa is going to be an important piece of the puzzle coming off the bench, or is it just a matter of it's too much for him to handle and he's going to have to focus more on next year?
Any other year, if we're talking about February the 8th, I'd say he's done. Well, he is what he is. This team is what it is. Roles have been established and defined. This is what they are. But as I just said, this Kansas team continues to evolve, mm-hmm. continues to try and find an identity. I'm not giving up on this kid yet. I know Bill Self isn't either. You will see him in Waco, I promise you. And he is going to be a part of this rotation. He's just got to get in and not be so sped up and sometimes have that deer in the headlights look where you get three turnovers in 64 seconds like we saw down in Norman. He's capable of so much more than what any Kansas fan has seen. He does it on the practice court. Not every day, not all the time. But we see what Bill Self was so excited about when they first got this kid cleared and why Kansas fought so hard to make sure he was able to join the ranks right away mid-semester this season. It's in there. It's just a matter of doing it on game nights. And that doesn't mean he's going to come in and be a 12-8 guy. But I do think he can be a big, broad-shouldered bully inside. It helps on the glass, extend some possessions with offensive rebounds, and be a better finisher. I know we've only seen him finish once, but, you know, catch it, pivot, dunk it. Catch it, pivot, right shoulder, left shoulder, score it. He can do that. We just haven't seen it in a game. And think about it, you know, if you or I were ever a college basketball player, boy, that's a stretch to say we would have played on that level.
Oh, yeah.
And all of a sudden we had to be tossed into the throes of the toughest conference in America where there's not a single night off. We didn't get a warm-up game versus Alvamar Tech, as Roy Williams used to say. We didn't get 2 months of winning at home by 39 on average in non-con play like we saw out of Kansas to open the year over the month of November when they were just blowing everybody out. And you had a chance to play with a free mind, relaxed and all that. Man, it'd be tough. Every possession could cost you the game. Games this close in Big 12 conference play. And I think that pressure has really mounted on young Silvio. And don't give up on the kid. Because once he finds a way to settle in, he'll bring something. But part of what's pushed him farther down the bench is the fact that Mitch has really emerged too. I think there was some thought that when Silvio came in on December 26th that, you know, he was going to eventually leapfrog Mitch. Well, that's not happening this year.
No.
But he can still help you as a third big, and certainly if they continue to start two bigs side by side, there will be games where they need the third big. So they're not giving up on him. He just hasn't come along as quickly as they would have hoped. But like I said, any other season, you know, your rotation would be carved out by now. This season it's not yet, and I still have hope within this month he can be closer to what Bill Self thought he would be when they first got him cleared.
Two big road games coming up, and at Baylor on Saturday, which folks can hear on Z96.3 The Lake, tip-off scheduled at 1. Tuesday in Ames to take on Iowa State, and that one at 6 o'clock on Z96.3 The Lake. Well, when you look on paper here, Baylor is 8th in the conference, 4-7 in league. Iowa State is last place, 3-8 in the conference, and if people get caught up in those numbers, they're fooling themselves because Iowa State crushed West Virginia and Ames here recently. They pushed KU to the limit final few minutes. It was still up for grabs in Lawrence. Baylor should have beaten Kansas in Lawrence the last time they played. We sit here and I know you mentioned the really three tough games late in the season, but as we know in this conference, there's not one of those you can just relax, you're going to show up and bring your C game and win, and on top of that, you're going on the road to Baylor, and there's certainly been better Kansas teams in this year's version that's gone to Ames and lost.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, you just mentioned how they beat West Virginia like a drum up there. They beat Tech by 18 up there.
That's right.
They've got a really good backcourt, does Iowa State, as we all saw, and when they're hitting and throwing in threes, holy smokes, man, they can hang or beat anybody they play. It was really weird to see them lose by, I think it's 22 or 23, Tennessee and the SEC Big 12 Challenge, and they turn around 3 nights later and beat West Virginia by 20-plus. So they've been a little Jekyll and Hyde, but in that building, they can certainly beat you. And I think Baylor, to your point, was right there to beat Kansas, up 6 in the last couple of minutes, and then Malik Newman happened, and it goes on a personal 12-0 run, and Kansas comes back to win it. But yeah, I mean, they're good, too. They're not as good as they were a year ago, but when Mounted LeConte is on and when they're getting Joe Dewall-Twill to be the rim protector and game changer as a big man on the back line of that defense, whether it's zone or man, they can hang with anybody. I mean, they were 2 points away from beating Oklahoma, 98-96, so they've won back-to-back games since, including a double-digit win in Stillwater, which I know drew the ire of the Kansas coaching staff because they're still kicking themselves over losing at home to Oklahoma State. So both these games look tough. And initially, when we looked at this four-game stretch prior to the big gauntlet I mentioned of Oklahoma, West Virginia, and Texas Tech, you felt like, okay, it's four games against teams that are 6-10 in the Big 12 standings. You can make hay over these next 2 weeks. You might have a two-game lead heading into that gauntlet. Well, they didn't, by stubbing their toe in the very first of the four, which makes each of the remaining three in this stretch so much tougher. No margin for error at all. We can't count on K-State beating Texas Tech as much as we talked about that early in the interview. We want it to happen, but you can't assume it's going to happen. And so, you know, hopefully that is the case, but you got to go out and win your game first. And Bill Self feels like they got to win all three of those games, Tech, West Virginia, and Oklahoma, if they want to assure themselves part of the prize here, because you can't just assume the other three remaining games that you've got in front of you here are games that are going to be chalked up in the win column for KU. So it's going to be a tough road, but, man, this is what it's all about. And you know what? Winning 14 should be the toughest of the group because this is the one that climbs you to the very top of the mountain. You're standing side by side with UCLA already, but this is the chance for KU to have its own place in history all by their lonesome that I don't think will ever be done anywhere ever in the major conference going forward. And isn't it fitting that this may be the toughest of the 14 and may come down to the last game of the 14? That's going to be exciting, if indeed it does.
Yeah, it will. Okay, real quick, just a quick synopsis. Football National Signing Day was yesterday. How did the Jayhawks fare?
I think they fared well. You know, 26-member class, as it currently looks, they could add a little bit more. But right now you've got 14 guys from the high school ranks, 11 from the JC ranks. You've got one other that was a graduate transfer from Florida State, a tight end, Nathan Saunders, I'm really excited about. Puka Williams is a big-time running back stud. Corion Harris, a highly, highly rated corner that was one of the early kids out of Louisiana to commit to Kansas, but he actually followed through and stuck it out the whole way. Him and Puka both did. And so those are two huge kids for KU that could be immediate impact players. I think Jeremiah McCullough at the safety position at Hartnell College is going to provide some great leadership in the secondary. They got three kids from Hartnell, which is the same JUCO that produced Fish Smithson. So you hope you have some immediate help there. And then, you know, Kendrick Miles is a guy that the quarterback, I don't know if he breaks through right away this season or not. He's pretty small, listed at 5'10". On film, he looks like maybe 5'9", but, man, he's got some reasoning in it in terms of his escapability, his improvisational skills when the play is breaking down, the pocket's collapsing, and he's just got to make something happen. And you know, the hope is that you've got something there that was a diamond-in-the-rough type find at quarterback. But obviously with all recruiting classes, time will tell, but they feel really good about this one. And I know there's been some talk about, well, hey, you said you weren't going to try and use too many JUCOs. Only 40% of this class is junior college, and half of those guys, more than half actually, six of the 11 are JC guys that have 3 years left. So it's not like they've done some kind of Band-Aid quick fix thing. If anybody tries to write that, they're not looking close enough at it. And they do need some immediate help from a veteran standpoint at several spots. So I like how it came together. And you know, if there's a quarterback in this class that proves to be a winner, then it's a really home run class. But I think at every other position, they've fortified areas of need, and that's obviously what you aim to do every time February rolls around.
Time for the off-the-wall question, Brian, and my condolences to you and your New England Patriots for not winning Super Bowl 52. The Eagles getting their first ever Super Bowl championship. I have to admit I was cheering for the Eagles because the Patriots have quite a few, and plus I like the storyline of the backup quarterback, Nick Foles. So the off-the-wall question for you is, what was the best Super Bowl commercial, in your opinion, that you saw during the broadcast?
Man, you know what? I didn't see hardly a single one. I had a group of people over, and we were hanging out, having fun, talking during the commercial. So I'm sorry, I'm going to give you a miserable answer because I can't even honestly remember a single commercial I saw. But normally I'm somebody that goes back and watches that stuff. At the same time, many times the best commercials, you might remember the theme of the commercial, but you have no idea what it was an ad for.
Yes.
I think that's a real problem with marketing today.
Yes.
But you're asking the wrong guy, unfortunately. I would tell you one of my favorites of all time, just to give you some kind of answer, was the Budweiser Frogs. I was back in high school at the time. And the Budweiser. There's a soundbite for you.
I like it.
That was one of my favorites. And that was genius because not only did it get stuck in your head, but you absolutely knew what they were advertising for and who the sponsor was in that case. So that's a throwback from 20 years ago, but I think that's still to this day one of my all-time favorites.
I thought you might say Eli Manning and Odell Beckham Jr. and the Dirty Dancing spoof, which was pretty funny. And I thought you might go with that answer, and I was ready to follow up with, because I know how you like to dance, and I know how you like movies and so forth and music. And I was like, nobody puts Baby in a corner, and nobody puts Brian Haney in a corner. I mean, that guy. He, but no, you didn't see that commercial. That wasn't your answer. So
it's funny. I got the tail end of that. I walked back in the room as he was lifting him up in the air. So I missed what preceded it. But that is pretty cool. In fact, both those guys are willing to do that. And bless Eli's heart, man. He's probably willing to do anything right now. It looks like they're probably going to take a quarterback in the top five picks, and his era may soon be short lived in New York. But Love it when guys can be self-deprecating.
Yes.
You know, some guys are too cool for school to do something that's, you know, a little bit deprecating. Of course, he's getting paid millions to do that commercial.
Sure.
But to be able to have some fun with it, something his brother has been great at over the years, whether he's hosting SNL or doing one of umpteen different commercials, Peyton's very good at that. And if you haven't seen it, you need to Google it. This will be the best thing I gave you today. But Google Peyton Manning Super Bowl Party. This was filmed last year after New England's comeback versus the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah.
And it shows Peyton hosting a party in which when everybody arrives, he doesn't have a dog in the fight. But as the evening goes on, you see that he really is rooting against the Patriots because he doesn't like the Patriots. And also the Patriots start coming back from down 28-3. And now he's vacuuming and they can't hear the game. And now he's about to hit the cord with the vacuum to pull the TV off air. And all of a sudden, the Patriots are going for the win, and he throws a football into the screen to break it because he just can't stand the fact the Pats are about to win. It's great comedy. You got to check it out. And to me, that's what I'm talking about when these guys can be not so serious, but they can have a little bit of fun, too. And Peyton's one of the very best at that.
Well, the reason I thought that commercial to fit you is because I know you're willing to put yourself out there. You've done that many times here on our show, and then sometimes we have some fun with those sound bites. So I thought that would be a good fit. And no doubt the Manning brothers are pretty funny in what they do. Hey, buddy, I appreciate the time as always. Safe travels to Waco and to Ames, and best of luck in the calls coming up on Saturday and Tuesday. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Wade. Give my best to Miller. I hope his basketball team's doing great this season, and we'll talk to you real soon.
Will do. Take care. That's Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, joining us every Thursday here on The Sports Ticket, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by see Matt and Jamie at 118 North Millen Boyd, or call them at 738-5701.